The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
We hear a lot of whinging a lot of the time about the licence fee for RT, the €160 per annum that we have to pay. But then we get programmes like the one which has dominated audiences over the last two nights. Over 500,000 people each night tuning into the RT documentary on Maurice McCabe, Whistleblower, the Garda who was treated so abominably by senior members of his force and particularly by his commissioner, Martin Callanan. Before we talk to Jennifer Gannon and Deirdre Malumbi from entertainment.ie about it, let's hear a little bit. We have loads of clips we could have taken. Let's just take this one about the lengths that he went to in order to become a guard and the pride he felt when he put on his uniform.
I applied back in 83 and I passed the exam, I passed the interview, I went for the medical and I was an eighth of an inch too short. And I slept on a board for about 3 to 4 months. If you lie on a hard surface, it may extend your spinal cord and it may give you the height. I made the height and I went to Temple Moor. Once we arrived, we were all dying for the uniform. So then we got it a week later. Once I put it on, I knew I was a guard. You could look yourself in the mirror and say, wow, I'm a guard. And I was. Even though I was only a week in the premises, I'm a guard.
And it meant so much to him, but it also meant so much to him to do the job correctly. And then there was the time, and this is the bit where he and his wife, Lorraine McCabe, discussed the day that he heard that gross, wrong allegations were being made against him.
It was the 8th of December and I was due to go to Dublin with the kids shopping. I was only working a half day.
Maurice couldn't come with me because there was something going on in the station. And he said he'd meet me afterwards. So I went off with the four children.
I went into my superintendent and she then told me that Miss Dee's father and mother had made a complaint to Cavan Station in relation to their daughter, and it was in a complaint of sexual assault. I said, what? I sat down then at that stage because I was standing up, and she said, look, it, I feel I had to tell you. I stayed in silence, I think, in her office for a few minutes and I left. So my biggest thing was, do I tell Lorraine? Do I ring her? We were all meeting in Blanchardstown that afternoon. I was in Blanchardstown walking around with the kids and Lorraine. I stayed back so they weren't able to see me.
And it was Hannah, who has special needs, said to me later on in the day, is Daddy okay? He's crying. And even at that stage, I didn't pass much heed.
Deirdre Malumbi, you've seen the two episodes. What did you make of it?
I thought it was extraordinary. It was really, really beautiful. I mean, it's funny because Maurice McCabe, it had always been a name I kind of saw like popping up in the news and stuff, but there wasn't that kind of connection there. And I suppose I didn't know the extent of his story and kind of the injustices against him. And even like watching this documentary and even just seeing him kind of as a person, not just as a subject in the news, and seeing how kind of warm and genuine he was, and the fact that all he wanted to do was to fight for justice and better policing in Ireland, and just for, you know, the public at the end of the day to get the best protection possible. It was really quite powerful, I thought.
Jennifer, it's really interesting that, you know, the story of Maurice McCabe has been covered at length across radio, television and newspapers for years. We would have Michael Clifford in here on a regular basis talking about him, the book that Michael Clifford wrote. And you might think, well, what need is there for a documentary? But there's an awful lot of people that these things pass by. And when they see it put in front of them on television, the human devastation it caused, I think that actually showed the merit, didn't it, of having
That's
a documentary
it.
Like this.
I think you can read as much as you like about this case and come away with it with shock and disbelief about the extent of the smear campaign. But when you hear someone as ordinary as himself or his wife, Lorraine, speak in bald terms, especially something as moving as when she was saying, you know, the time when he said this, the tree he was going to hang himself from, or the fact that he ended up having to go to John of God's, that, you know, these are just ordinary people doing something that he felt he believed in. And it's truly astonishing. And it really makes you think about what kind of country that we do actually live in. This whole say nothing, I'm all right, Jack, you scratch, you know, my back, I scratch yours kind of condition that we've been blinded by for years, and people don't want to speak out about it, or would rather it just went away. And we've seen this before with the cases of, you know, sexual abuse in the church, the industrial estates, the industrial schools, that even Primetime did a great show about before. And I think that's where we were saying, you know, RTE excels in documentary.
Which is good use of the money. Now, this again, I think the €160 per annum that many people complain about. Yeah. Should RTE be doing more of this type of material? Because it is very expensive for the work that Katie Hannon and her team did over months to put together something like this, that this is the type of stuff that they should be spending their money on, perhaps instead of other things.
I think so, yeah. I mean, like, even in terms of like Irish film, I would say as well, the kind of documentaries that Irish film and TV have produced in recent years have been extraordinary. And I do think that that's where the resources kind of work out the best and everything. So I would agree with that. I think that something like this is something people need to see, and they're producing like of such high quality, even like watching it, how well edited it is and like how concise it is in those 2 50-minute segments. It's really well made, as well as like a really powerful moving film.
And I think that for so many people to have watched it over the 2 nights, it actually just sends out a really powerful message to a lot of people, I think, politicians, etc., that, you know, the people have a vested interest in what happens to citizens in this country when they actually try to speak out about something that they believe in. And I think hopefully, you know, something will come of that and we'll remember this. And I think that's why it's so important.
Let's actually just hear one more piece from this documentary. There's lots that we could actually take. But just given that thing that we just heard there about the day that he first heard about the allegations, this is where Maurice McCabe speaks about the moment he told Lorraine about the allegations made against him and how their life changed.
We'd come over to Dublin that night and we had put all the kids to bed, and I told her in the sitting room. And I broke down. She hugged me and she cried. And that's how I told her.
I knew it was wrong, but it's just making it easier. I was afraid he'd take his own life. We told nobody all over Christmas. We had the Christmas party. We would have done everything that we'd normally have done. The rest is just a blank. I don't remember.
Completely changed our family life, completely. I didn't bat the kids ever again or wash them. I wouldn't be here if there was visitors with their children. I'd always have something to do.
Okay, that was from Whistleblower. That was on RT the last 2 nights. Let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous. Noel Edmonds and I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here.
Forget Brexit. There's only one deal, or no deal, I care about this week. And finally, I'm a Celebrity, I've gotten Noel Edmonds. Now, they've been chasing him for years and years and years because Noel is telly gold. They're like, I'm really worried. I don't know if anybody doesn't know, Noel is heavily into cosmic ordering, which is basically like a modern version of just sending a letter to Santi. So he just writes a little note sometimes to say, give me a load of money, and posts it off. And then in a couple of years, it eventually happens for him, or that's what he believes. And he also believes in stuff like he's visited regularly by 2 melon-sized orbs that
Mr.
he
Blobby
thinks
and
that represent his parents. And also he has this whole thing about how cancer is caused by negative energy. I mean, he's on the verge of a David Icke breakthrough.
Yes, as I'm just thinking.
And Harry Redknapp is there. So I'm dying to see the dynamic between these two guys. And Harry Redknapp will probably be really upset because before Noel was unveiled as the 11th contestant, Harry Redknapp was the highest paid contestant in I'm a Celebrity history. He had, I think it was 500. And then Noel,
500,000 to go on it.
And Noel is on 600. So.
My God.
He's worth it. He's worth every penny.
You watch, God, you can see you're excited.
You watch how he turns every campmate into some kind of, it's like some kind of sub-Scientology thing. I think that's what's going to happen this year. And it's so exciting.
Who's Ant with or Deck with? Which one is it gone again? Ant, his aunt is gone.
Gone.
So who's Deck with, Deirdre?
Deck is now with Holly Willoughby. So I think they'll have an interesting kind of chemistry and dynamic. Now, Holly Willoughby on This Morning is kind of renowned for being terrified of like animals and the jungle and stuff like
right,
that.
She won't so be doing the Butch Tucker trials.
Yeah, it'll
is
be
that
an
what
interesting
actually
kind of.
Did I actually know what they're called?
It'll be an interesting kind of dynamic and an interesting show. But I was really surprised when I saw the lineup was announced on Monday, and I've actually heard of some of these people. Which usually I'm like, okay, they're all like soap stars and stuff like that.
I think it doesn't matter because it ends up just being a like literally a survival of the fittest. And someone like Noel, though, just to go back to him saying Noel Edmonds is, he has a life size mannequin called Candace. He drives around in the back of his car, so people won't stop him or ask him for lifts, which is kind of
you know a worrying amount about Noel
it's
Edmonds.
It's kind of veering into like Phil Spector territory. He also had three Mr. Blobby theme parks that were closed down, and one of them was called Dumb Blobbin, and that's where Mr. Blobby's final resting place is going to be when he dies. This is going to be the greatest series of I'm a Celebrity ever. I mean, to have Harry Redknapp, that was a massive deal anyway, because I think a lot of people want to hear about Rosie the dog and his beloved Sandra. Rosie the dog that had the bank account in Monaco, let's not forget. The richest dog since Lassie. So I think it's going to be really, they've really stuck their neck out.
What age is Harry Redknapp?
He's
70, is he?
Yeah.
And I mean, he nearly died after a really serious car crash in 1990 at the World Cup. How tough is the jungle if people...
Gemma Collins 70. Left after like a day. So, I mean, you know, it really just depends.
That's Gemma Collins.
I but I think what they're banking on this year is that the more known faces will keep people interested because, as you said, it's usually just people from Hollyoaks.
It's interesting, actually, isn't it, Deirdre, that they are actually able to reinvigorate I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here each year in a way that it seems now almost impossible with the X Factor, which apparently is going to continue until when?
2022. So the
Why?
Hope is, yeah. So even in spite of like falling figures and stuff like this, what producers have basically said, look, we are still tapping into this younger audience and they're going to be growing up and watching the show. So we think that the viewers are going to start coming up again. And you always have, I suppose, your diehard fans and everything like that. And I think that with every year, they are just going to introduce more and more gimmicks similar to I'm a Celebrity, I suppose, to keep people hooked and everything. And I mean, you do have these huge name musicians who come on and perform the show, even as just a single act thing. So I think because of that and because it's like tapping into the millennials, yeah, the X Factor is just going to keep going and going.
It's like a curse in a fairy tale that we're going to be subjected to mediocre karaoke singers for the rest of our lives. Like, and even to me, it's turned into Weekend at Bernie's the musical. Like, you're basically dragging carcasses around the stage like dead bodies. There's no life to it. The life has gone out of Simon Cowell's eyes. That's if you can see Simon Cowell's eyes. He's had so much plastic surgery, he looks like a chow chow dog at this stage. And nobody cares anymore. Robbie Williams didn't even turn up 2 weeks ago because he'd rather get the money to do a gig. And they pre-recorded a live show for the first time. And it went disastrously wrong. There were sound issues. Every contestant sounded like a, you know, like demented cyborg. They had to stop it. And then they actually had to, ITV had to make them repeat the actual live show again on the Sunday. Now, X Factor does feel like it never ends, but this is getting to a farcical level that's like Groundhog Day. They did the exact same show and they needn't have bothered. Theresa May could come on there and do like the window licker dance like from the Aphex Twin video and still it would have dwindling viewers because people would rather watch some of them from Steps do the cha-cha over on Strictly.
Now, Deirdre, I'm not going to take issue with you on air like I did off air during the break. I'm hating House of Cards season 6. Dreadful, right? And I'm now worried that one of my other favourites, which is returning on Friday on Netflix, will it live up to it? Narcos is back, but it's moved from Colombia to Mexico. Will it be as good as the brilliant Hunt for Pablo Escobar?
Yeah, so this is an interesting one because it's taking on a whole new story now. It's following the rise of Guadalajara. And sorry if I've totally mispronounced that. The Guadalajara cartel run by Miguel Angel Felix Gallardo. What's interesting about this is the show is actually going to be led by Diego Luna, who people will recognize from Rogue One, a Star Wars story. incidentally, his character from that film is also going to be leading the Mandalorian TV series. So it's all about Diego Luna at the moment. I mean, like, he's off Game of Thrones, but he's certainly got, you know, plenty left in his career for this. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see what a new storyline will take. But it's hard to know because the original was so popular and everything.
It's brilliant. I loved it.
Doing a Godfather on it. When you've run out of ideas, just go back. And like, just when you think there couldn't be another drug cartel, they still have more to say. So I think, you know, fans will be really impressed with it. I think what they've done, you know, they're restarting, like they're starting the history behind it. So I think that'll be an interesting angle to put on it. And if that's maybe the only way you can frame these shows now. They even did it with Mamma Mia 2. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the only way you can kind of, sequels really aren't interesting and, you know, never mind anything after a sequel. But if you can do something beforehand that, you know, actually harkens back to what's going on in the series you've already seen, it's a good idea. Even like with, you know, Better Game Call Saul.
Game of Thrones as well. It was all about the prequel, what happened before. So that does seem to be the trend with TV anyway.
Okay, let's get your picks of the week in case we run out of time. Although I'm sure I'm a celebrity, get me out of here is yours, Jennifer, the way you've been talking.
Null vision.
It's not. It's something
well,
else.
If I know some people, you know, I'm a celeb just doesn't fill them with joy. So they're at the same time, Louis Theroux's next documentary in his Altered States trilogy is going to be on BBC Two on Sunday at 9. And this week it focuses on exploring assisted suicides and euthanasia in California. And California is one of the 6 states in America where the terminally ill can decide to end their lives or not. So it's all around the implications, moral implications around it and the legalities behind it, as in, is that person in the right state of mind to request to do such a thing? And, you know, I think the last one that he did was about polyamory, and that kind of started things off maybe in a gentle, you know, more fun way. But then, you know, with Louis himself, you can really go in deep and in depth on a subject. And I think this will be really worth watching.
Deirdre, what's your pick?
I've picked The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. So this is slightly a cheat, but I mean, it is on Netflix. So I think that it does count as kind of TV viewing, even
this
though
it's a movie. This is a movie that has gone, isn't it?
Yes.
That's from how many years ago?
Oh, no, this is the Coen brothers' new one.
Oh, it's the Coen brothers? Yeah, this is the 6-part series
exactly.
That they're doing.
Exactly.
Oh,
so this is the anthology, which was actually originally going to be a TV series, and then they made it into an anthology film. So it essentially consists of these 6 stories. It comes to about 2 hours, 10-minute running length, and you've got one that follows Tim Blake Nelson's character. He plays the title character. You've got one that's following James Franco, plays bank robber. Another one follows Liam Neeson. He plays this impresario who's looking for kind of his next big act. And it's a very strange film, but also very kind of the Coen brothers, like tongue-in-cheek kind of vibe and everything. You've got some musical moments mixed in with like violence, and there just seems to be like people dying left, right and center. It's a very kind of surreal film and very like darkly funny. But I do think that if you're a Coen brothers fan, you'll definitely like this and want to check it out. And the 6-story structure, I think, is really different to anything I've seen in a film or TV show. So even on that basis alone, it's worth checking out.
Just to finish off, only a couple of weeks ago, we spoke about how James Buckley from The Inbetweeners has said that if the show was being launched in 2018, it wouldn't happen because it'd be cool to be offended. And now we're hearing today there's going to be a one-off anniversary show. So I'm praying that this particular clip is not going to be offensive to any listeners. Here's a bit from The Inbetweeners where Will and Simon call in sick to school.
This is Mrs. Cooper, Simon's mother, year 12. Simon and his friend Winnie McKenzie have come down with food poisoning. Must have been from the chicken.
You put on your mum's voice.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mrs. Cooper. Now, you say your son is ill?
Yes.
Oh, well, Mr. Gilbert,
the head of 6, is just here. I'll pass him over.
Hold on one second.
Oh, no, there's really no need.
Look, if we hurry, we can still make it in time for English.
Hello?
Hello, this is Mrs. Cooper, Simon and his friend Winnie McKenzie. Winnie McKenzie, thank you, goodbye.
Mrs. Cooper?
Yes?
What exactly is wrong with Simon?
Food poisoning.
Okay, Simon.
That's enough. I know you're bullshitting me.
I think you better get into school.
Cheers, all the best, God bless!
I'd get in before you make things...
Well, that was fucking dreadful.
I think he bought it, though.
I still love The Inbetweeners.
Like, its popularity has never dimmed. And I think that, you know, it's just that James Buckley's point was, you know, pretty much ridiculous. I think the problem being that it's just, you know, that whole complaint about PC gone mad... I mean, what people are asking for is just more variety and more voices and more inclusion for other people, because these people were the gatekeepers, like, let's say, young or older white straight guys. And, you know, now there's a variety of voices in comedy that, you know, and don't be afraid for other voices to come through. There's room for everyone.
Thank you very much, Jennifer Gannon and Deirdre Malumbi from entertainment.ie.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.